don't give a damn if it's 9 a.m. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. Give me beer or whiskey, wine or gin. Anything to shake this mood I'm in. My football team's got me drinking.
Back at it again. This is the Shades of Blue Soccer Show, and we are the Blue Testament.
That was awesome.
I wanted them to, like,
where the hell have we been for 3 weeks?
I wanted them to give me some good banter.
We all crawled out of our holes, and we are back in the studio after a little hibernation.
We were all ready last week.
Last week someone got ill.
Last week there was a game. The problem is the game in the middle of the week. The game in the middle of the week is when we would normally do the pod.
It was so, their fault.
So our window to do a pod was only like 1 day or 2 days.
We're working with a lot of schedules.
Blasted Chiefs, you know, what do they matter?
Chiefs play on Sundays, or sometimes potentially Thursday or Monday. But
well, somebody does a lot of work with them, so...
Yes. So does Cody.
Yes, the two of us are burn our entire days when the Chiefs are at home.
There you go.
And the midnight oil in terms of last Sunday when they get flexed up different. To the crazy primetime game that was a 45-10 blowout. So
yeah, but I'm all for the late games because I have to show up at 5 a.m. on a game day.
I just remembered something that we can save for extra time. Okay, all right. Okay. Got it.
Noted.
Got it.
I don't know that you needed to announce it. You could have just...
Yeah. I just thought of it.
Write it down.
I just thought of it.
Teasing everybody so that they...
Well, I was about to say something, but now I don't know if that's what you were going to say. Damn it.
It's okay.
Okay, right. Introduce yourselves. My name is Cody Bradley.
I'm Allie Trost.
Robert Russert.
Thad Bell.
I sound like Rastro when I say my name.
So, back on top.
Believe it or not...
I believe it.
What the?
Believe it.
What the?
Believe. That's the new motto.
No, I'm not saying I don't, but
that's the Swope Park one.
Wow.
Let's talk about the Dallas match, and we can start it by...
You mean the ass whooping?
Yeah. Oh. Mm. And we can talk about Matt Beisler's words, fiery words, a little bit. He actually showed some emotion. We're not used to that from Matt Beisler.
If that's fiery?
Well,
on the field, he was pretty fiery. They had to, you know, push him back.
So we're referring to an article on MLSsoccer.com that came out. He was on a radio show. I don't know what station. They're not reputable, I don't think. but he had some choice words for Dallas, and you should go check it out. It's kind of interesting to see him being candied from all of us who interview him and see him as a robot at times.
He's very calculating in what he says to the media, especially ever since he got chastised and hung out to dry by media for basically they misconstrued what he said about the national team and Jurgen Klinsmann. So he's been really super careful about this.
Once bitten.
And the underwear thing. People didn't like him for that underwear thing.
Were you jealous?
No, I thought it was good, but I do recall you seeing an issue with the underwear ads.
I was surprised he did it because I thought that people would complain about it. It wasn't that I didn't like it. Not that I cared for it, but yeah.
Anyway, Dallas, they suck. We won.
I think the one thing that I thought about first, my first reaction after that game was, you know, Sporting and FC Dallas have been going back and forth kind of in this little tango between first and second place for most of the season. Sporting's never lost this season 3-0 at home. Dallas has. So that was the most impressionable thing to me, is that at this point in the season, losing 3-0 at home in a game like that against one of, you know, the team that you've been going back and forth with all season, not a very promising sign going into the playoffs.
Was that like a little neener, neener, neener?
And yeah, Beisler was kind of right with everything he was saying. Like they kind of fell apart. They were being childish a little bit, and that's why that happened to them. That was not a good showing from them at home in front of their fans.
I will disagree. I don't think that that's why they fell apart. I don't think that that's it at all. They're that way in every game. They it has nothing to do with that game, them falling apart.
Well, a team that does that every game is going to be prone to falling apart.
They do every little gamesmanship thing that they can in every single game to disrupt the other team. It's whether it's slow rolling the ball, especially on the road, you know, the goalie taking every little bit of time, rocking from every side to the other to pick up a ball and all that stuff when they're on the road. Every single little thing that they can do from the get-go to slow the game down. And again, I know we've talked about this in the past. I don't know what kid grows up to want to go out and stand in front of 20,000 people cheering or booing you to not play a game. You know, so I don't get it. But that's the way Dallas is. That's one of the reasons I really have disliked them for a long time.
Well, if I was a betting man, I would bet that there were some conversations in the Sporting Kansas City circles about the behavior of the FC Dallas players and how we could get, you know, under their skin. Because we came in, we were more physical than we usually are. We were kind of throwing some attitude around. I think that definitely contributed to it, and that may have been part of the plan.
Good.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it also goes to show just how important mentality at this point in the season really is.
Oh, yeah.
Showing, you know, kind of a meltdown situation versus staying calm, cool, collected when it really matters. I think that outlasts those little tactics that might work early on in the season when, you know, there's not as much on the line. You know, there will be down the road, but I just think that mentality at this point is such a big thing. And I know I talked to Beasler and I talked to Opara about coming into the playoffs and training in the past couple of weeks, and they've both commented on the mentality of Sporting this season and just how comparing it to teams in the past. You know, Beasler and Opara both have been with Sporting since they won MLS Cup so in 2013, and so just comparing it to that, and they feel very strongly about, you know, where this team's at, not only physically on the field, but also mentally as well.
And, you know, maybe it goes back to Russell and Kamara at the end of the Vancouver game. You know, Russell's maybe been a leader of that kind of attitude in some ways. I don't know exactly what happened there, but yeah.
No, and I like that point because I think Russell may be a big difference for this team versus previous teams. About he has a little more attitude, a little more edge, a little more chip on his shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know you listen to some of the idiots that write for MLS.com, and they talk about how there was no difference makers on Sporting going into this. They're wrong. Johnny frickin' Russell is the difference maker. He's the guy that will throw the team on his back and go score a goal or make the pass, and he's that guy.
And I mean, am I wrong in saying that Johnny Russell was the number nine? It wasn't the number nine that Sporting Kansas City was looking for. It was the Johnny Russell that they were looking for. He does everything that people were complaining that the, you know, false number nine or the absent number nine that Sporting didn't have and wasn't doing. That's what Johnny was doing. And I think that what he's brought, and we've talked about this the entire season, what Johnny Russell has brought on the field and off the field and bringing that attitude but still staying composed but just kind of bringing that edge but not letting it affect his game. He's been so, so crucial, which he got a well-deserved reward for that also.
Well, I mean, you brought up the number nine. I mean, how much praise did Shelton get after this game by those at MLSsoccer.com as well, which was a bit surprising.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Oh, rightfully so.
I think Shelton, I've always been a huge Shelton cheerleader from the side, I think,
yes,
since
you have,
the beginning.
This pod's been very pro-Shelton.
Yeah, this whole pod has, and I know that he's gotten a lot of criticism for, not to say he shouldn't have scored in a lot of situations earlier on in the season, but the way that he fights for the ball and is that first line of defense and, you know, keeps plays alive in the way that he acts physically and just doesn't give up, I mean, that is the reason. He was so much of the reason that Sporting was so successful this past weekend.
And, hey, that ball he played to Gutierrez on that exchange, that was sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something you see Gutierrez doing earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in the Vancouver game, he basically helped set up Daniel, was it both times or at least one of the times,
right,
just by
right.
being physical and
oh, yeah.
shouldering off the defender and then playing the ball.
That was for the go-ahead goal, yeah.
And speaking of that, too, a trio that we talked about a lot throughout the season when they were in the
I thought
of
you
it.
When
oh,
I saw
yeah.
that. I thought of you.
Shelton, Shallowy, and Russell. I mean, due to injury and then international duty and other things like that, we kind of saw that trio break apart. after they had a really successful stretch early on in the season, but I think we might be seeing a lot more of them now going into the playoffs, because obviously the three of them showed that when they're back together, really nothing's changed and they're just as successful and the chemistry is so strong. Like, it's undeniable, I think, between the three of them.
Well, keep talking about it, because there's a story on MLSsoccer.com that gives the stat about a tweet about what the record is with those guys on the field. Yeah.
I know which one you're talking about. I can't recall it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But let's just suffice it to say that
the devil's advocate.
No, I'm agreeing with you. But let's just suffice it to say that Sporting tends to win more often when Kyrie starts at center forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can argue that Rubio has far more talent or Namath has much more silky moves, which he's really not had for a couple years. But anyway, Diego has more talent. He's a better pure goal scorer. And for at least a few games, he had some of the Shelton-like tendencies. But they win. They give up less goals. They score more goals when Shelton is on the field.
Yeah. The stat that Bob mentioned, so Sporting KC's record when Shelton starts at center forward, 8 wins, 4 draws, 2 losses, plus 14 goal differential. And then when Shelton, Russell, and Shallowy start together, 8 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss, and a plus 16 goal differential. So, I mean, and I know what you're saying, too, with the Rubio thing, is that, you know, obviously Rubio has more goals. He had a really hot August, and he's great. I mean, there's no denying that Rubio's a key part to this team and that he is a crucial key player in the offense when he's out there. He's made a huge difference. He's scored some major goals that have lifted Sporting in game-winning situations or tied the game, won them points. But in terms of the majority of the game, I think Shelton's a better player for those longer stretches, whereas I think Rubio comes in and brings a really strong burst or a really high energy, but I don't know if he, again, is like the 90-minute center forward.
But it was the opposite in Vancouver. Rubio started, then Shelton came in off the bench. So, yeah.
And then they scored.
Yeah.
No, and again, I've actually liked Rubio for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the ability to be the starting center forward for this team. I just think that the way Peter has them playing and the way they want to play, Shelton is the better for the team result at this point in time.
But can we talk about how hard Peter Vermes' job is? Because I feel like any given game, there's so many different variables where it's almost like the game comes down to when it's close, it comes down to Peter using the right pieces at the right time. And there have been obviously situations where he's subbed in, you know, Rubio, and Rubio comes in, scores a huge major goal, vice versa, bringing in Shelton, he comes in. And, you know, how do you always make those right decisions, especially now in playoffs when it matters the most as a coach?
Well, he tends to go with the hot hand, but he always says it's not a difficult thing. That's just coach talk, I think.
I don't know if I would.
Of course,
it's
nice to have all those options, but
right.
He tends to go with the hot hand. But
having that many options and having so many different, I think chemistry plays a huge factor in it too. There's so many pairs or trios or whatnot on the field that play so well together. How do you read which ones are going to be right at the right time and which ones you need to switch up?
Is it,
I don't know. I'm not a Major League Soccer coach, probably for a reason.
Well, it's kind of like in hockey where they put lines together so that, you know, the left wing, the right wing, the center, it really matters what kind of chemistry they have. Mm-hmm. And you got somebody out there who can play make, somebody who can shoot, somebody who can muck it up in the corners, that sort of thing, right? And it's all a talent of which lines you put together. Well, in soccer, you don't have the talent. You don't have the ability to, like, change those lines on the fly and bring in a different line and then change it up.
You only have so many subs. Like,
right.
You can't.
So you have to have that plan ahead of time and then know when as the game changes, you know, the tempo changes, the momentum changes. Now you can bring in somebody different to change up that speed or exploit something that you've seen the other team doing or, you know, a sub that they've made. So it's a talent that I think Vermes may not have had was not really good at back in 2011, but he's taken a lot of criticism for those subs or not making subs. Oh, they're playing well out there. Leave them. Mm-hmm. Right. But especially this year and last year, he's made a lot more subs.
Well, I think I lost a little bit in the game was the resurgence of Gutierrez. I think he's playing better now.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to be a big factor in the playoffs. And of course, Shaoli, the last two games, him back where he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Huge.
It's because Kyrie and Russell are out there.
So something else that, well, maybe Peter didn't make this decision, but something that happened in the game was Ilya finally missed a penalty kick. And so do we have a new PK taker?
It's not finally. It's the second one.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
And
but he cut the cord. Vermees finally cut the cord, I guess. Or did Johnny just say,
I think
fuck it, Ilya, I'm taking
it. Isn't that what the commentator said? That Ilya said, Johnny, you take it? That's what I thought happened.
I don't know. You trust what the commentators say?
Hey, they're there. Oh, wait a minute.
but everybody wants Johnny to continue taking them.
I would vote for that, yeah. I mean, yeah, I would.
I would, quite honestly, it's a little bit situational for me, but yeah, I love Ilya and he's such a great player, but I have never been impressed with his PKs at this point. I'm not sure that I was really super impressed with Johnny's. I mean, it was low and hard, but I would actually rather it be a little bit, I like a higher penalty kick. It makes it harder for a keeper to get to, but
that goal's
it's
a goal.
Also more difficult to do. I mean, that's the point of it. Well, so what you said it's situational. In what situation does someone other than Johnny take it?
When he's the guy that's fouled. It's always seemed weird to me that when you're the guy that earns the PK, you don't get to take it, but I know why they do it, because the emotions are high,
yeah, right,
or whatever.
Sure.
So
Shallowy gets fouled, he gets to take it?
No, that's saying the opposite.
No, Shallowy should never take a PK.
See, I would disagree.
He's too young.
All right, I'm thoroughly confused then. So what was that saying?
No, Dad was saying that he understands that when the player who gets fouled doesn't take it, it makes sense because emotions are running high.
Yeah, but before that he said he thinks they should.
No, I said it seemed weird a little bit, but that's I do understand why they do.
However,
it.
if there was to be a player who would take the PK after getting fouled and probably score it, it'd be Johnny Russell.
Yeah.
So then answer my question. Who takes penalty kicks for you? You said it's situational. I thought that meant depending on who gets fouled, they take it.
Yeah.
So if Shallowy gets fouled, he takes it?
No.
What? What am I missing here?
Why does everybody else understand this?
What did you mean when you said originally situational?
Hold on. Hold on. You just said...
You're being so dramatic.
Whoever... I don't understand how I'm missing this. You just said whoever gets fouled takes the penalty kick.
No. I never said that. I said it always seemed a little weird that was
okay,
not the case.
Okay, so hold on.
But I understand why it's not.
Answer my question then.
Did you actually listen to what I just said? Did you actually listen?
Yeah.
You weren't listening.
No, he wasn't. Go ahead. Go ahead.
It's the Cody Show. Go ahead.
What?
Go ahead, Cody. Go ahead. Speak. Cody. Dead air is not good potting.
When does Johnny Russell take a penalty kick and when does someone else take a penalty kick?
Johnny Russell, I think, should take it when pretty much anybody else is fouled except Johnny. So,
but when Johnny's fouled,
somebody
else takes it?
Yeah.
Why? Where? I don't understand.
That's pretty much like standard. It's like standard soccer coaching. When you're the guy that's fouled, you don't take the PK.
Yeah, but think of the drama. Guy's writhing on the ground. He's hurt. He gets up and he still scores.
I mean, that's pretty standard. A lot of it is
Allie?
Striker.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that. Yeah, like I get it.
You've heard that, so it is pretty standard. Okay, cool.
That's two different things.
I think that's what you see pretty much across the board. I mean, I can't think of any team I ever watched or played on or followed throughout my entire life where that wasn't 90% of the time the situation.
For me, standard is most teams have a penalty kick taker.
Yes and no.
Normally, standard for me would be most teams have a penalty kick taker.
Question, I can't remember. Has there been a situation this season where Ilya was fouled, where he drew the PK and then took it?
No,
I don't think so.
We don't earn enough PKs for that kind of thing.
I know. But yeah. I can't remember if there was a situation where that...
I don't remember him getting fouled and taking it.
So we wouldn't have anything to compare this season if Sporting would still have Ilya be the PK taker.
And
if
also, going off of past seasons, it's not been necessarily a rule who took it. It was sometimes decided on the field who felt
was
that it was...
feeling the...
Yeah, because like,
the mojo.
I can guarantee you, as soon as somebody went down in the box, Kai Kamara was grabbing the ball, okay? Well, it didn't matter. Okay?
That's a long story, isn't it?
All right.
Columbus.
But with Sporting, it wasn't a problem, okay? So, at least not that we know of. So anyway, he would always grab the ball. Yes, it for a while it was Dom taking him until he missed. And then it was Benny taking him.
Okay, who was it before Ilya?
Benny Failhaber?
Yeah, Benny had it for a long time.
Okay, so nobody else did it before Ilya this season.
And I watched Benny get fouled in the box and then take the penalty kick last year.
I would nominate Gutierrez, if not Russell. He would be my choice.
Have we seen him take one?
I don't know. I don't think so.
But you're confident anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way. I was I was just asking.
But I also wonder if Johnny took it because this last one, not because Ilya's was saved, but because they were trying to get him to 10 goals. Just, you know. They're already up. They're already up to nothing.
I doubt it was because of that, but
that may not be a Peter decision. That may be they decided it on the field.
Yeah, so. that's yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if Johnny was just like, "I'm taking it." Yeah.
But I can't imagine.
And you're not going to say
like,
no.
A situation like that at this point in the season, him being like, "I want to get to 10 goals, you guys."
Yeah,
like,
really.
I'm gonna.
Well, he was not wanting Daniel to have more goals than him in league play. Yeah.
I don't think that either Daniel or Johnny would ever put a game on the line so that one could.
Well, agreed. If it was agreed. The game on the line, I completely agree with you, but it was the third goal.
Against FC Dallas on the road, I still
in
don't
the 80th something minute.
I don't think that either of them would.
So I don't think that they were worried about the game totally at that point. It's like, yeah, so. And again, who's going to worry about Johnny taking it? If he wants to take it, let him take
right.
it.
Right. No, I think that the team is in good hands if Johnny Russell is, you know, up
all right.
to bat.
On Friday when you guys go to training, ask Ilya and
I'm
Johnny
gonna ask.
What happened on
I
that
have
field.
To know. How was this decision made?
Yeah, no, that's a relevant question. I want to know.
Yeah, I agree.
There you go.
We will ask Johnny.
All right, moving on. Salaries were released. Should we talk salaries?
Speaking of Johnny Russell.
Speaking of, yes, Johnny got quite the bump. Like almost
double.
Almost doubled him up.
From $699,999.96
to like 1.3. So that doesn't seem like that's incentives that he hit is why he's getting paid more. It seems like they silently at some point gave him a raise.
Yes, it seems like that.
But why wouldn't the team...
Right.
Wouldn't they want people to know that they're being nice to their players in such a way?
Well, yes, but they're also weird in how they do that sometimes because they may not have wanted to make other players want that money. I don't, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's like when they announced, the day they announced Matt, Graham, Roger, and Ilya all signing new contracts, they would not release the amount of years. Up in for the last couple of years, they've announced the amount of years and that sort of thing in the contracts. This is one time they went, yeah, we're not saying anything about it. And it was all because one guy got a 2-year, one guy got a 3-year, one guy got a 2-year with an option, and they didn't want anybody going, well, in a press conference, well, Matt, why did you get this and Graham got that? So it may be one of those when they signed it, they just didn't want it to come out right at that point because of something else they were doing. I don't know. That's just speculation.
Johan Kraze, not
best player in MLS.
As you, I don't really get that joke, but as you like to say, very useful, very necessary for us this season. As much as people probably wouldn't like to admit that, ended up being like absolutely necessary for this team.
And probably earned every bit of the salary that everybody complained about, including some idiot up at MLSsoccer.com.
But see, that's my issue. He didn't complain. We're talking about Matthew Doyle. I got into it with Doyle on Twitter. But he wasn't even actually complaining about the salary. It was the designated player label, which in theory, like what would make you mad about that is that he's one of the top three paid on the team.
Yeah.
But there are 7 players that make more than him on this roster.
And like we've talked before, the DP label is pretty meaningless now with the era of TAM and GAM and all the other mechanisms for signing players and all that. And it's always been that you could sign a DP in name only because they actually made less than the max amount, but because of a transfer fee / signing bonus, they were above it. So it doesn't really mean anything. When you were talking about Beckhams and Robbie Keens and stuff like that, yeah, DP meant something. When you're talking about Gerso and Johan Kraze, DP doesn't mean a whole lot. And Matt Doyle is smart enough to know that. But A, he criticized Kraze early in the season, and he's unwilling to back off of that and admit that he was ever wrong, okay? So he's – and in fairness, Doyle is not a stupid guy, okay? He has some good analysis. But I'm picking on him now because he's wrong, okay?
Yeah, he was. And he was wrong to do it on that game when Kraze played well.
It was the stupidest time to bring that back up because he was the best player on the field – injured. He was friggin' injured.
I know, and to make it worse, he like doubled down on that again and was like the goal didn't change anything. He had a bad night and was being subbed out because of it. No, dude, he was limping. Like you could visibly see him limping on the broadcast, yeah. And that's why he was subbed out.
He got tackled from behind twice with no call, okay? And I'm not saying the referee was against him or anything. It was just they got no call. He was Peter called it a Charlie horse. But obviously he was questionable and wasn't good enough to go to Dallas. It wasn't healthy enough to go to Dallas, okay? But he was the best player that night. If you look at ratings on the Audi Index, if you looked at the friggin' WhoScored.com ratings, he was one of the best players on that night. He scored the crucial goal that started the comeback. He was everywhere. And if you say, oh, well, he was walking when he scored that goal, like he was, you know, being lazy. No, he was freaking injured. When the ball got through, he ran to it, took a nice touch, put a beautiful ball in the net, and walked off.
Yeah, and it was not. It was on his weak foot and still not an easy shot.
Yeah, so.
And so, yes, while he may 680,000, there's an argument that that's a little much, like when you look at the stat line from the season so far. But I'm definitely holding by that it is not bonkers.
It is not. And again, it how much a player makes is not always, you're not going to see it always in goals and assists. Yeah, a lot of times in forwards and midfielders you will, but not always. And for somebody to think that he's not playing well, early in the season when a lot of people were down on him and calling him names and
rightly so,
all that, I was sitting here saying, but if you saw he was making a touch, he was making a play that didn't quite work. He's got to adapt to the speed. Some guys come in and they're already at the speed above MLS, and they actually settle down, Felipe Gutierrez. Okay? He's come from a higher level. You know, a guy from La Liga comes, and they're from a higher level. The guy comes from the championship that's from a equivalent or higher level. Johan came from a decent league, and Doyle was wrong about that too. When he was a backup on a bad team, he was wrong. Okay, he started 20 something games in the last half of the season that he was with the previous team. So anyway, that's not a backup. Okay, so Doyle's wrong about that. He was wrong about him not being good. The guy has been improving all year, adapting to the league, and he's made crucial plays, crucial goals, put in crucial minutes at how many different spots now?
That's what I was going to say. Stat sheet aside, Johan has played at wing back, which was apparently his most comfortable position, according to Peter Vermees and Johan himself. He's played at wing forward or out wide on the wings. He's played in that central midfield position. Like, he's played all over the field. I mean, doesn't matter how many goals he's played. To have a player, especially with the injuries that Sporting sustained this season, to have a player like Johan who stayed healthy, who showed improvement, who was dedicated to getting better, to see him be able to switch up in all these different positions and get better in each one. I mean, that to me is the value right there. It's not even what he puts up on, you know, how many goals he scored, whatever. It's like, hey, Johan, we need you at left back. We need you center mid. We need you, you know, he played all over the place.
Yeah.
I think say the scenario where Kraze was not here and Gutierrez goes down, I think Vermees would happily pay $680,000 to like have a backup attacking midfielder right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I must admit, So it's like, I do, like, looking ahead, it's like, man, Krause could be, like, really good next year. But also, is he the number two in the depth chart for attacking midfielder, or is a young lad named Busio?
Well, that's probably a question for later, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an off-season question.
It is.
Well, this team is always, Peter, in almost any sport, you can say this, you want some guy who can play a lot of positions and play at a high level, okay? The last couple of years, we've had Madranda play, you know, five different positions. This year, we have Krause play. I think he's been on every side of the forward line, including the middle. He's been the 10. He's kind of been the 8. He's been a left back, okay? He could pretty much play anywhere at this point except center back and goalie, okay?
Which, like, that's okay.
Yeah, we don't want him there. So you want somebody who can do that. This team's always wanted somebody who could do that. It's been different guys. It's been Jacob Peterson. So if you want to compare Jacob Peterson to Johan Krause and the amount of money they paid and the amount of goals they put in or the amount of quality they provided at playing all those different spots, then it's an argument.
You can even argue that, like, Lobato, before Lobato got hurt, was very much that versatile player that Sporting had, and even Madranda a little bit as well. So Johan also, and if you look at in terms of versatile players on the team, they were kind of missing too due to Lobato and Madranda's injuries. So the fact that Johan was the third, I mean, I know there are other players who kind of move around a little bit, but in terms of three who've moved around a lot, Johan was kind of the only one now, considering Lobato and Madranda are out for the rest of the season.
Now, and also keep in mind, when Johan was signed, there was no Felipe Gutierrez. Okay.
Right.
Johan was signed. Felipe Gutierrez was a guy who they had on the radar, but kind of fell in their laps. It was like, oh, hey, he's available now. We can't pass him up. So they made the deal. Johan probably would have been the starting 10. Again, we can argue whether that's really 10 spots. But anyway, he would have been the starting midfielder next to Espinoza in front of Ilier if there wasn't a Felipe Gutierrez. Mm-hmm. And he probably would have struggled for the first month or two of the season. But he would have gotten a lot of games in. He would have had – the team would have adapted around him a little bit. Mm-hmm. He would have adapted to the team. Instead, Felipe Gutierrez comes in. He can't not start him.
Right.
Can't pass signing him up. And he's scoring goals. So, okay, we move Johan out to a spot where he's not so comfortable. Now he's moved around so much, quite honestly, I don't care where we put him. I'm pretty comfortable with him coming in. And he understands the league. He understands how Peter wants him to play. And he can pretty much come in and play anywhere. I'm willing to pay $500,000 for a guy who can do that. Yeah. $600,000, $650,000, mm-hmm. whatever the number is. He's worth that money now.
Yeah.
The curious case of Krause.
I might steal that headline, actually. That might be a...
I'm definitely going to name the podcast that. That feels right. So another one we could talk about, Fontes.
I won't sing.
I'm as someone who's rarely neutral on things, I don't know where I stand on this one. He's making just under a million by less than 4 cents.
I know, that 4 cents kills me.
He took Johnny's salary.
So... he is a backup. He's played one full game, started one game, two games.
One.
Yep. One game, yeah. Looks is
that just like Matt Beisler from the press box on the field.
Right, yeah. So is that too much for a backup, or is it smart of an MLS team to make sure they have three quality center backs?
It certainly is. And it's also, as I think we're all thinking, it's about the future. I mean, Ike and Matt can't play center back. We don't know how much longer.
Right.
And I would not be surprised next year if we see Fontes playing starting half the games. I would not be surprised at all.
I agree with Bob.
And rotating through. And remember, you still have Open Cup next year. You have Champions League next
right.
year.
Champions
yeah.
League. That's
okay.
Yeah.
And you also have the option, which I think we could get into another discussion. This is probably going to segue a little bit. But you now have the ability to have Beisler, Opara, and Fontes as a three-man back line.
Right, right.
Three quality center backs, which is always, again, always seemed weird to me that your center backs is a three-man back line. But anyway, that's the way it works. So three center backs is the back line, and they're all good. I mean, Fontes is, again, he's probably still needs to adapt a little bit to the league because he hasn't played a ton of minutes. And adapt just meaning get used to how this league plays, but he's now sat on the bench for quite a few games. He's had one full game, a sub in, and I wouldn't be too worried about him being in there. But going into the summer transfer window, everybody's like, oh, we need defenders because we don't want to have Moore was gone, Graham Smith and Amir Dish.
Evans was Evans, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no qualms there from any of us. We're pleased with that one. Yeah, and it's a sign of MLS in the time of Tam and Jam, but we had a stat, or Mike had a stat. Someone had a stat. Allie.
Oh. It was me. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Just a stat about, just shows the progress of our league.
It does.
Encouraging signs.
Yeah, I actually thought this was wild. Oh. All right. So, in April of 2014, the highest paid Sporting Kansas City player made $398,250. And then in October 2018, the average Sporting KC player had a guaranteed compensation that was $398,442. So, the guaranteed compensation for the average Sporting player this year is higher than what the highest paid player made in 2014. So that's pretty wild.
There's still a lot of guys making 50,000, but you have the guys making 1.6 and 1.3 and 1 million. So.
Yeah, nine guys over 500.
Well, and also considering age and experience, too. I mean,
yeah,
those are mostly some of the youngins.
Which, when I started covering this league, when I started transitioning from being just a fan to actually like covering this a little bit, and players are making $14,400 at the low end.
We can continue the salary discussion, or do you want to move on, Mr. Cody? Because I do have a prompt if you want to continue the salary discussion.
Yeah, so yes.
All right.
Continue.
So, okay, a poll. Of these three, Ike Opara, Ilie, Tim Melia, getting paid $300,000 at 325, 330. Okay, 342 for Ike. Which of those three has the most right to complain about a salary?
Melia.
All right, then. I would
for
agree.
For me, if I had a rank, if we're ranking and not just like polling, I'd say Melia, then Ilie, then Ike.
Okay,
I would agree. When I look at like longevity and I look at just overall contribution.
And of course, the reason I bring that up is because from Fernandez, Gerso to Ike, that's a $250,000 a year difference. Wow.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's like this in almost every profession. You have to move to make more money.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're someplace and you keep getting pay increases, you know, you have to go to a different company in order to get the 50% raise.
So you're telling me this is Ilie's new salary after re-signing? Or was that simply an extension of his... You know,
it was a new contract, but I don't know if this is his new salary or if that doesn't reflect until next year.
Right. Yeah,
I was gonna say because this one looked pretty similar to.
Because Beisler, Zusi, or Ilie, or Espinoza, none of those four that signed have different numbers for their contracts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't realize that Zusi was making and Beisler were making that much. All right.
Yeah,
I thought they were lower.
Yeah, so I don't think that's Ilie's new contract.
Okay.
Because it was an extension, they just would have been dealing for the next season.
So. That's why we think Russell's a true new contract in the middle of the season.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, maybe something's different. I'm going to try to find out. I just haven't had a chance to ask anybody yet. Or
Thad Bell investigates.
See if anybody will actually tell me anything. But
all right. Before we move into like actually discussing the LA game, should we like talk about scenarios, what we think will happen at the end of this season, what we need?
Sure.
Should we?
I guess there's really not many any scenarios. We just have to tie. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah. That's all we have to do. We just tie. Yeah.
Well,
unless 15 goals are scored by...
Literally, unless Dallas beats Colorado by 15 goals.
Right, exactly. So.
Which, with Tim Howard in goal, that is possible.
Is that what it said, like, actually?
That's true.
Actually 15 goals.
Yeah.
There, like, why even mention that? Like, that's not going to happen.
I agree with you, why even mention it?
Sporting Kansas City, unless, like, you say unless if it's, like, a plausible
Exactly. I didn't see anywhere else report that. I just looked at the table and wanted to make sure.
Oh no, they reported it.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, yeah, it's definitely
the funniest themselves thing did. I've literally ever heard in my entire life.
Why even mention?
I mean, when's the last time we've seen a soccer game have 15 goals on one side?
When I was like in fourth grade playing parish soccer in like the B League. So that's when the last time I saw 15 goals.
Indoor soccer,
futsal. When you play with those pug nets, to bring that back. Throwback, not pug nuts. Man.
No, the team probably did that to rub it in on Dallas.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But, it's still the scenario. It is legitimately the scenario.
Watch it happen.
I mean, it's one goal. I mean, yeah, watch them, like, we'll be sitting there, Sporting be tied, and we'll see Dallas up, like, 10-0 or something. You know?
I think when I record
Fox Sports 1 will be like, damn it, we chose the wrong game.
When I record my preview, I think I'm actually going to say, like, with the most straight face, however,
right, yeah.
Should Dallas score 15 goals against Colorado?
Well, it's not just scoring 15. It's having a differential.
Yeah, we have to beat them by it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, given that Colorado doesn't score any.
Which, if I would have to think in MLS at this point, if somebody teams up by 10 goals, I mean, the other team's just going to start throwing
punches.
Wait,
isn't the game over at that point, or is that just high school?
You know?
Oh, yeah, is there no Hail Mary situation in MLS?
I mean, Tim Howard's just going to start punching people or something. Right? It's not going to even end.
Now, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
Yeah, you know what?
I'd watch that.
All right, Dallas.
That'd be worth the price of admission.
Come on. Actually, honestly, for either team.
Tim Howard, please retire.
I saw him. He was doing commentary today in the Champions League.
Was he? Okay. Good. It's his future.
On TNT.
That's a good job for him. Anyway.
Okay, LAFC. Bob, you did some scouting.
Some research. Yeah.
You looked at the last match, I guess.
Did we cover all the scenarios, though? I mean, just a tie to finish first with the goal differential.
Maybe there are other scenarios.
Well, yes.
If
they lose.
God forbid.
They could drop all the way to fourth.
They could, but Dallas could also lose.
It's Colorado.
I know.
But, yeah, so, I mean, Sporting could still finish fourth, right? If that's feasible, or is it third only?
I think it's third.
Oh, yes, third. We can't fall behind Seattle.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. We do have... Oh, okay. Well, no, they would have to score...
Partial.
They'd have to score 10 goals.
Information.
So anyway.
Oh, wait, no, they wouldn't. If they won and we lost, Seattle would have 18 wins, which is the first tiebreaker.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I was right.
Yeah.
So they could still finish fourth. But the good news is that still means it's a home playoff game.
Yes. The home playoff game
is
guaranteed.
Yeah, but...
That was the stated goal all along.
That was the minimum goal.
Okay. Well, that other story that I was referring to earlier, here's the math on that. For the last 8 years, teams with byes have made it to MLS Cup 28% of the time. Teams without byes have made it to MLS Cup 11% of the time. So let's get that bye.
The first one was 28%?
Yeah. Teams who get the bye in the first round have made it to MLS Cup 28% of the time.
I mean, that just seems about right to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It shows you the bye is
valuable. It doesn't even feel like a very damning stat.
Yeah, but it's better than 11% if you don't get the bye. Just saying.
28% it's made it, not won it.
Right. Not won it, but made it to MLS Cup.
Does anybody have the stats on winning it?
Yeah, they're here.
I seem to remember 4%. Sporting losing to Portland in the playoff game, they didn't have a bye, and they went on to win it. I remember Sporting losing to Seattle, and they going on to win it.
Yeah, this has happened in recent years.
Okay, so it's not an uncommon thing to not have a bye.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't say it was. I was just bringing that stat up.
So it's... Yeah, it's just getting there. And I would anticipate that, 28% of the time.
Because
they're the better team. But it's not the better team for the season. It's the team that's hot.
Well, here you go. It says, since 2010, MLS Cup is won by the same number of teams with a seeding of third or worse as by a club with a top two seeding, 4 each time.
Ding.
Yeah.
It's the team that's hot. And that's the problem is when you when you have playoffs, it's not the team that's the better team all year long. It's the team that's hot going into it.
And we are hot now.
Well, and if they win this last game, rolling in with three big wins like that, got to be feeling very good.
And right now, I'd have to say Sporting and Seattle are both at least in that hot category.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I see what I want to happen is I want a Portland-Seattle playoff match because Portland could win that because it's just Cascadia and get Seattle the hell out of there.
Yeah, and that'd be fun. That'd just be fun for MLS.
Yeah. And I wouldn't mind seeing an LA-LA clash, too, you know?
Who does Portland play this weekend?
This weekend?
Yeah.
Not sure.
And Seattle plays San Jose.
Yeah.
But we're all rooting for Portland to leapfrog Seattle, right? For fifth place? Or for fourth place?
No doubt.
I'm picturing all of the players playing leapfrog on the field. You can't say that.
Oh, the Whitecaps? It's Portland have the Whitecaps.
There you go.
Otherwise known as Vancouver.
So that'll be another Cascadia match to finish the season.
Yeah, but the way Vancouver's going, but they did come back and help us out. So thank you. Thank you, Vancouver.
Yeah, they did. Without Kai.
Yeah.
So it would be good if Portland could win, Seattle lose. But they're playing San Jose, right? So yeah.
But if anybody saw my tweet, here's what I am predicting is going to happen. I'm predicting this now. DC United is going to come through the East. We're going to come through the West. It's going to be a 2004 rematch at Children's Mercy Park, and we're going to win. That's what I'm predicting.
Nice.
Yeah. I would be happy for that.
Yeah.
Get to see Wayne Rooney.
Exactly.
Who eliminates Atlanta and New York, or do they eliminate each other?
Well, DC... Very well, possibly. I could see DC eliminating either of those teams, especially Atlanta.
They're the hot one right now.
Yeah, especially Atlanta. With Almiron out, I think Atlanta's pretty beatable. I think they've proven that, actually, in the last couple weeks. But, yeah, I can see DC United beating either of those guys.
But a home playoff game is back.
Yes.
You can get excited.
Thank God.
So, yeah, it's good. We're happy.
We're happy pod, happy life.
The playoff game in 2013 that went into extra time against...
New England?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my favorite sporting events that I've ever been to.
Sestanovic's goal? That was an awesome goal.
Yes. I was in the cauldron having right in front of me.
Claudio Bieler even scored
and
that
he did,
game.
He did. One of his rare goals.
Yeah.
Yes, the cauldron, it literally looked like a tornado had gone through the cauldron after that Sestanovic goal. I ended up like five rows below where I started before the goal. There was just like people on the ground and
those
like
are things you never forget.
Yeah,
that's
was
what
wild.
It's all about.
Okay, so LAFC.
LAFC is a weird team because they have averaged 2.2 goals per away match, which is more than they've averaged at home. But they also average the same amount giving up goals, 2.2 per match. Away, which is interesting. But I think we all know LA's foil is their defense. You know, they tend to leak a fair amount of goals. We're both 3-1-2 in the last six games. And just to make sure the standings are clear, we are 2 points ahead of them. Goal differential is the big difference. We are at 24 positive. They're at 17. So that's why a draw gives us the title. But LAFC with Failhaber and Wynn have been playing oftentimes those two in a 4-2-3-1. And to me, it all comes down to Graham Zusi. Because if you watch, you know that teams try to catch us on the counter as our wide backs attack forward, right? As we're caught forward, they try to split those wide backs and pull out our center defenders. Well, that's exactly what Failhaber and Wynn specialize in doing, is holding the ball, circulating it around so that our defenders have to come upfield to defend that, to try to win the ball back. So, to me, that's where the difference is going to be made, if that's the way that LAFC plays. Otherwise, I think we can run the gut on them, and because that's where they're weak, is defensively straight down the middle.
I remember at one point this season...
Kyrie Shelton.
Yeah,
Kyrie Shelton and Felipe Gutierrez.
Yeah.
I remember at one point this season, Bob, you doubted LA as like a legit team.
Because of their defense.
Are they formidable? Are they a formidable opponent now?
Well, they've always been a formidable opponent offensively. I mean, they've got Diamandi with 12 goals. Carlos, how do you say his last name?
So really, it's just that you
13 goals. Rossi, 12 goals.
So really, it's just you're unimpressed by the West, other than Sporting Kansas City.
Seattle scares me. But
yeah, they do. Yeah,
FC just has that Achilles heel. It's their defense. You can run right through the middle. I mean, Benny Failhaber and Lee Wynn in the central of the field. Come on.
Okay, well, I have a question for all of you. Who is the center forward to start? Is it Kyrie Shelton? Is it his hold-up game? Is it his ability to, you know, his presence in that central role? Or is it going to be Diego Rubio, who is quick on his feet and has proven to be pretty dangerous playing up the middle for Sporting on Sunday?
I think just the way they've played together, as you mentioned, Shaoli, mm-hmm. Shelton, and Russell, plus the way Gutierrez is playing, I think you have to start Shelton up front.
Yeah, that's the four attacking that I want.
Yeah.
I know there was, I forget which year it was, but there was one year where the question of who starting at center forward was Teal Bunbury and Dom Dwyer. And whatever year that was. And for a while, on the road, they would start Teal and bring in Dom. And at home, they would start Dom and bring in Teal. Or do I have that backwards? I think that's right. I wonder if this could end up being a situation like that, where on the road they start Kyrie because it's more, you got to be a little more defensive oriented, mm-hmm. even though he's, you know, and on at home you're just going to go score a bunch of freaking goals and put in Rubio,
right.
And then bring in Kyrie to close it out at the end, or
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm not suggesting that's exactly what happens, but I'm just curious if that could be one of those options.
So going back to our stats earlier, you'd like to see the breakdown of home versus away, instead of just when Shelton starts with.
I don't think we can look at that right now because Shelton was the starter regardless until he got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it turned out. I just wonder now with how Rubio has improved.
Right.
And
most of Rubio's stats would be from when he was like playing that unbelievable stretch in August.
You know, before that he was a super sub coming in and scoring really good goals quite often. Now he's showed that capability to play somewhat Shelton-like and score goals. And then, I just wonder if that could be an option. Like, maybe he starts at home and Shelton starts on the road or vice versa.
Yeah, but right now you don't mess with the chemistry and the good things have happened since the second half of Vancouver.
Good juice.
You stay with that.
And at least that's Vermees' philosophy generally.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he has won against in the past.
Right.
And
just like going into playoffs too. I mean, you know, does he want to just go with what's going well, or does he want to still keep, you know, the options, keep players coming, circulating players in and out? I don't know.
Well, somewhat related to that, interesting point about LAFC is they tend to take their foot off the gas when they get a lead in a game and allow teams to come back. I mean, look at the Galaxy games, right? So, you know, that could be a situation if we do fall behind wherein, okay.
We bring in Zlatan.
Right. We bring in a Rubio and, you know, we pressure them in different ways.
No, I like the idea of starting Shelton and holding Rubio back on the bench and then finally, like, unleashing him in the 70th minute.
Yeah, I think that's probably what happens, but.
I almost picture him, like, a bull.
Yes.
I'm really picturing for me.
Some players play better when they get
flag.
Pissed off.
Yeah.
They really do. When they're pissed off.
And
that's exactly how we like Diego Rubio. We want him pissed off.
We do.
I also kind of like the idea of watching Shelton run over Benny, as much as we love Benny.
Oh, yeah. And he would do so.
You know what I don't want to see is a smug look on Failhaber's face when he walks off the field after the game Sunday. I do not want to see that.
I don't want to see Latif dancing.
That's what I was just about to say. I was like, if I have to see Latif do that stupid dance.
It was almost endearing last year. This year it sucks.
Indeed. Hi. All right. Do we have extra time topics?
Bob, no. you teased
well,
one at the beginning.
You guys had other ones. I don't want to.
No,
take
I didn't
your
have a single thing.
Yes,
I was waiting for yours.
What did you tease earlier?
What did I tease earlier? Oh,
I
yes.
I told you to write it down.
Is it time? I'm sorry, it just irks me. I love Mahomes. I love the Chiefs. But is it time for MLS to change that schedule so that MLS Cup in the playoffs and the run to the playoffs gets more attention? I mean, we had to get a game put on FS1. It wasn't going to be. But now it is, which is nice. But do we need to change the calendar so we don't cross with baseball and football, the two biggest sports in America, in the fall when it's playoff time and MLS
Cup time. I mean, I get that, but also, like, yeah, don't schedule the games at the exact same time, but I think they could.
Could they not have put it at 5:30?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for the love of God.
Exactly. You can play in the same season. I think just be aware of what you're going up against
you
on
think so?
Sunday nights.
Why was all those games on Sunday going up against NFL?
I have it. It's like they waited for the NFL season to start. They're like, yes, now our Sunday
yeah,
schedule
right.
is
yeah.
in full swing.
Good idea.
It makes no sense. I don't understand.
What? Yeah. And
it's a bit of a different
discussion.
Well,
it's college football, too. I mean.
Right.
And it's not just not the only reason to change the calendar on MLS. Like,
no, it's
it
not.
Would also like that's
well,
another
to me,
discussion.
It's a bigger reason.
Yeah, but you know, it would also be nice to align with FIFA dates
well, yeah,
and you know
course.
All of that.
And with the soccer specific stadiums becoming more prominent, it's more easy to do.
It should be, yeah.
Yeah.
You still have the weather problem and
oh, screw the weather.
That's
fans are fans.
The weather.
They will come out for their team no matter the weather.
Oh.
And there are still MLS games in blizzards. So.
Exactly.
Well, and there are MLS
but
teams who play in Portland and Seattle and New England and New York, like states that have much harsher winters, much worse conditions than out here in Kansas City, Missouri. And it would be really convenient if Arrowhead and Children's Mercy Park were anywhere near one another, but they're not. I will be either scrambling to get to Children's Mercy Park after my duties at Arrowhead are done, or I'm just going to be SOL and crying my way back home.
Yeah, so if turf is still going to be a thing in MLS for the foreseeable future, then yeah, why? I mean, what the hell? Why can't we play in December? I don't understand. Put a roof over it. Let's play in December. Let's go. I don't want turf, but if we're going to do it, like, come on.
I mean, okay, so we move the playoffs to April. We're still competing against the NHL and the NBA, but that's a lot less in my mind than competing with baseball and football.
Yeah.
Well, I think for sporting, it's also unique, too, because they have two very popular and very, like, long-standing, like, the Chiefs and the Royals are, like, right. staples
yeah.
in Kansas City. Other cities, for example, St. Louis, they don't have an NFL team. Yeah, you compete with baseball a little bit, and then hockey,
yeah.
yes, but you know, there's more room, I think, for MLS to kind of control the what's going to be more popular that day in terms of who's showing out for what.
Yeah.
So it just, I think it goes, it depends city to city, but.
It does depend city by city and a lot of other factors too. But if you look at the trend for sports of which way they're going, like which ones are growing and which ones are
oh, yeah.
shrinking.
Oh, yeah.
NBA is growing. MLS is growing. All the rest are shrinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
NHL, I think, is staying steady, but they're just not a factor in this discussion unless you're.
Yeah, because in some
Canada.
Ways, MLS eclipses the NHL as far as.
Yeah. So
tennis,
I think,
et cetera.
If you change the season, and again, we still have the weather problem, we can argue about that, but I don't bother right now. It's too long of a discussion for this.
Indeed.
But if you go change your where you're competing against the NBA playoffs now, I think you're going to have some of the same problem. It's because I think it seems to me that more people are NBA and MLS fans than they are MLS and baseball fans or MLS and even
yeah.
even NFL fans at this point.
I
mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of overlap between
yeah.
fandoms, okay?
I bet, but no, you're probably right. I bet if you polled MLS fans, I bet their number two sport that they follow would be NBA.
Yeah. And
honestly, or like hockey.
Hockey would definitely be up there. Definitely.
Like, I mean, this is me looking at, like my own personal
so
family.
So you're saying
but
that key demographic of 24 to 30 is that way?
Oh, it's yeah,
yes.
basketball and soccer for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. It's definitely that way. I mean, there was just actually one that came out a week or
I know,
two ago.
It's actually good timing we're talking about this. I did just see all of this recently.
Mm-hmm. NBA is growing. MLS is growing. Everybody else is shrinking. I'm not sure if hockey shrank or stayed like almost exactly the same as far as popularity. And in the young demographic groups, which, you know, is your spending money, your people go to the games money and all that type of stuff, it's MLS's pace is close to eclipsing several sports, okay? They're still well behind NBA. They're still below NFL, don't get me wrong. But they're, like, even with baseball now in the young demographic and trending up where baseball's trending down.
Yeah.
Hockey, again, is pretty much static. But it's static because it's only in certain cities and it's only popular in certain cities, even though it's in other cities.
Right.
And NFL continues to drop. Yeah. Nice round of applause for that
but
one.
Not as much as people, like, I've seen plenty of things just based on broadcast numbers and, you know, general perceptions from preseason till what's actually been playing out through now 7 weeks, going into 8 weeks now, and it hasn't been as bad. But in general, yes, especially in terms of younger demographics and like millennials and where they're putting their money towards sports.
And how much that has to do with the length of the damn games? I mean, football games and baseball games take freaking forever.
Baseball especially, at least like football baseball has always been a sport. And I grew up in St. Louis. Like, the Cardinals are your bread and butter. And I would dread, I mean, until playoffs came around, which thankfully the Cardinals always did pretty well in that category and were pretty exciting. But, I mean, would it kill them to shorten it to, like, 7 innings, 6 innings? Does it have to be 9?
Sorry, I cut that off earlier. And by the way, somebody's going to bring it up. I am not for relegation and promotion at all. But anyway.
You gave me an opening. Sorry. I was just thinking about this earlier when I was looking at the standings. Not just today, but even before. If you look at the East and the Western Conference, there's 7 teams playing for a spot right now on each conference. So there's 14 teams that right now the last game matters.
Oh yeah.
Okay? The last game of the regular season matters. You can regularly look at an EPL table and a lot of the other big leagues, and at the end of the year, the last 5 games don't matter for half of the league. The bottom 3-4 teams, it matters. The top 2 or 3, maybe 4 teams, it matters. Often it's even less than that, quite honestly. I mean, like, Man City ran away with it last year. When did they win the whole thing?
Yeah, with 4 a month to play, at least.
Yeah, and Man U's done that in the past where they've won it with 3, 4, 5 games left to play. Chelsea's done it where they've won it with 2 or 3 games left to play.
We here like to make fun of the word parody and how they often, you know, we like to make fun of that joke, how they advertise that fact so hard. But Sunday's going to be pretty fun.
it's gonna
be some crazy shit. Like, last weekend was pretty fun.
There are 14 teams playing for spots. There's four teams at least that are potentially out of the playoffs after this weekend.
Right. Poor Real Salt Lake didn't even get to play. They had to sit and watch.
Yeah. So those games matter to all, you know, 14 teams. That matters. And the rest of them, they're just playing out to see whether or not they get scored 15 goals on Colorado or not, right? But it's 14 teams that matter instead of just 5, 6, maybe.
Would that be just like Tim Howard, just to literally lay down in the goal and allow them to score that many goals just to piss us off?
Honestly, I would not be surprised one bit.
And that would be a way to go out and never play professionally again.
Right.
In Tim Howard's last game, he conceded 27 goals.
Made a sham and professional soccer.
They would have to, like, void that game because it would be out, you know. But, so anyway,
I would love to see Taylor Twellman's rant, though, on whatever he would say.
What are we doing?
I just like when he rants about anything.
Yeah.
I'm not against the whole idea of pro rel. I just know that we're not at the point where we're ready for that. Because of the ownership and the contracts and the leagues and all that stuff. Someday in the future, yes, it will happen. But it's got to be when it's the right point, and
I don't agree that someday it'll happen.
That's what I do. I always think that, and I want it to, but you say that matter-of-factly, and I know that there's a lot of people that think it will never happen.
Oh, they're wrong.
I agree.
But it will take the right term is not there, but it will take a density of teams and leagues and people trying to get to the top level, having enough of those teams. Again, when we have the amount of teams,
Cincinnati's.
Well, yeah, and that will be a thing, right? Like, it definitely will be. There's going to be teams in the USL that are pulling more fans on average than an MLS team at a certain point. Like, that's going to. Well, shit. I mean, didn't that already happen with
22,000?
Cincinnati? 22,000. I think Cincinnati was already averaging more than some MLS teams.
Yeah, quite a few of them. And it will. That's why I do think it will happen at some point. And quite honestly, I think at some point MLS will go, screw USL because they pissed us off for some reason.
And make MLS 2.
And make MLS 2, and all the good USL teams will defect. they will all have to pay $100,000 or $100 million entry fee and meet certain criterias, and the US will be USL will be left with, you know, 8 broke ass teams just like they were before MLS decided to support
them. They'll call it the MLS championship because they still like to echo Europe enough.
Yeah. And that will be your pro rel at that point. And it,
I don't know.
I foresee it happening at some time before I die, unless it's the next few years, which you never know. But
knock on wood.
Let's not say that.
We go right or left first.
Okay, so is everyone, you guys are all going to be at the game, I guess?
I'll be there.
Me and Allie are still a question.
I'll be there.
Like, learn how to fly or figure out teleportation in the next couple days, I will for sure be there. If not, it is going to be
What's
dependent.
What's that called in Harry Potter?
I don't know. I'm like not that big. I've read all the books, but I have a really bad memory.
Sorry.
Yeah, what's what called?
Like a broomstick?
Flying from one place to another. There's a certain name for it.
Apparition.
Apparate.
That's not like just a Harry Potter thing. That's like an
apparition?
Actual.
Apparition?
Yeah. Isn't that it? That's an actual like term.
Okay.
Right?
Well.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, if anyone knows, please comment below. Let us know. We're starting our Boo Testament, apparently, book club. And we're going to be reading Harry Potter.
I like our new logo on Twitter.
I do, too.
Harry Potter. Spooky. Harry Potter movies suck.
They do.
Third
books
one
are better.
Very good.
I go for Hermione, though.
Oh, yeah.
Pedophile.
All right. Anyway.
What?
Third one is
she's
the best
like
one.
She's like 20-something, isn't she?
On
now,
that note,
not in the movies.
On that note, predictions
well,
for
I
the
was
game
also,
on Sunday.
I was also a child when she was a child.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Predictions for the game on Sunday.
Oh, Allie.
What? I want to know.
3-2 Sporting.
Allie?
Oh, am I next? Oh, okay.
Man. Thad's going to say Sporting's going to score an own goal.
Okay. I predict a Sporting Sporting win. Victory sounded weird coming out of my mouth. Sporting win, 4-1.
Sporting 3-1.
I hate you, Bob.
Well, it's not exactly a difficult like thing to call out. You literally do it every game.
Yeah, but that's just because it's fun.
Haven't had one in a while.
He likes a bit of anarchy.
And again, I always hate the whole prediction thing, but I think Sporting is most likely to win. And if I have to give a score, I'll say 2-1.
I really do believe that they're going to win. This team feels different than in years past.
It'll be an own goal by Failhaber.
There you go. I like that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
Love you,
Benny. Things feel different this time around. I don't think they get that draw against LA in years past. Like that's one point that made me feel like this was gonna be different. And then the second half against Vancouver, like when they scored that first goal, I was like, it's back. I was in a bad place. They scored that goal and I was like, they're gonna do it again. They're gonna do this all over again, and we're gonna fall out of a bye. And
hey, Cody, how long is our podcast tonight?
We've gone much longer.
I thought so.
Okay, but I'm very excited. If I'm not there, don't take that as me not being excited. It's just going to be a long day.
Gotcha.
I may be
Go
skipping.
Chiefs.
Who? What?
Sorry.
Not the right pod for that.
Yeah. my daughter's got a tournament. I might be skipping the championship game for this point.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Thad, say something prophetic.
Brad Evans made the bench in Vancouver.
It's not prophetic. Okay. We will talk next week. Until then.
Woo!
Go Sporting.
Anything to shake this mood I'm in. My foot butting's got me drinking. My foot. drinking. My football team's got me drinking.